have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum, and I'm welcoming
Maren Johns. Hi again. I'm editor-in-chief of Queer 40. Nice to be here, Andy. So wonderful to see you again.
Good to see you. Let's get to the news. Let's tell them what's in the headlines. Well, the Biden transition team includes LGBTQ people and is looking at LGBTQ people for appointments and is getting a lot of LGBTQ advice about what to do.
And Justice Samuel Alito has delivered a crude anti-gay speech in an online meeting with federal.
The new Speaker of the House of the state of Maine will be a 28-year-old gay man.
And it is Transgender Awareness Week, and we highlight some of the excellent documentaries that you can watch on this subject.
Yeah. We made progress this week in, are you ready? Are you sitting down? Angola and Latvia.
Yes. Oh, it's always the surprise nations that make the biggest strides. I'm so happy. And we have out gay Dr. Dimitri Deskalakis. Is that right? Did I say it right?
Deskalakis, yes.
Deskalakis.
He's been a guest on this show.
Right, new director of HIV/AIDS prevention at the CDC. Not a moment too soon.
I'm kind of amazed that this happened at the end of the Trump administration when they're firing all these people. The first man on the cover of Vogue magazine is Harry Styles in a dress.
Yeah.
And?
What else have you got for me? I think I've cut my list off.
We're going to give you the gay angle on season 4 of The Crown. I watched the whole
thing. You are. You're going to
tell you about a non-binary star of a new ABC drama. Okay. Welcome, Maren. Maren, the editor-in-chief of something new called queer40.com.
Right.
What is Queer 40? I've seen it, but tell people, what is queer40.com?
So it's a website that is dedicated to all LGBTQIA plus people who are, I say, Generation X and above. So anyone basically over the age of 40. And we feel like it's the demographic that has done most of the heavy lifting, most of the activism, most of the struggle for visibility and rights, and doesn't get much coverage. So that's really my goal, is to bring us all out of the shadows and have some fun.
Well, you can't say that people over 40 have been in the shadows on Gay USA.
That's right. That's right.
With the two white-haired hosts of the show, usually. Now, Maren, you've been here a long time. So anyway, queer40.com. Just write the words queer40.com and you can...
Check me out, yes.
Check it out. Check you out. Check all the great stories out. So you've lived in this... You're originally from Australia, but you've been here a long time. Let's catch up with you. How are you reacting to the elections here?
Oh, boy. I mean, I've been here 15 years and I'm not a voting citizen, so I'm always treading very carefully with my opinions out of respect. But I have to tell you, this election was emotionally fraught for me, because I really feel that it got to a point of life and death, and also on an ethical level, whether or not I wanted to continue living here if this election didn't go our way. And the way I would describe it to people is, I don't think I can actually get through another 4 years of this. You know, mostly it's emotional, and it's also watching everybody else suffer and live through a war that we don't have to go through. And I think that's what makes me question it ethically. In my heart, I really did think Biden was going to win. And I, you know, we would get, as journalists, you would have received it too, a little bit of intel that made you think it was possible. But then there was a moment a couple of weeks before the election when I started to even doubt my own instincts. And I started to think, oh my God, Trump is going to get in again. And that was, I had a couple of bad days where it was anxiety, depression. Yeah.
Well, before the last election in 2016, Ann Northrup just kept saying to me, because she was a watcher of The Apprentice, and she said, brace yourself.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it can't happen. It can't happen. It can't happen. So I ended up having chest pains and going to the hospital when he got elected. Well, that was all right. Wow. But this time, you know, I just sort of, you know, the outcome was not certain on election night, right? Although Trump was sure he won. And I, you know, just had that low grade, horrible anxiety, hard sleep. And then, of course, you know, we were liberated. But yet here we sit on November the 18th, and we're still not liberated from this guy who refuses to cooperate and refuses to concede. And it's awful. So anyway, but well, Biden is trying to plow through.
Anybody who's been with a malignant narcissist or a person with a borderline personality disorder or in an abusive relationship, you all know that the extricating yourself from the situation is almost as bad as what you've just lived through. And I feel we've lived through 4 years of a really horrible abusive relationship. So it's not going to be easy getting out of it.
Yes, what shocked me is, and I've said it, is that I didn't think he could expand his base. I thought everybody who wanted to vote for him the last time did, and he alienated everybody else. But no, he did expand his vote. Luckily, Biden, you know, expanded the Democratic vote even more, although, you know, we still lost the, well, we haven't lost the Senate. And by the way, these Georgia Senate races, apparently, the Republican, you know, everybody said, well, it's going to be very hard to win those two runoffs in Georgia. But now the Republicans are worried about them, and they don't know what to do with Trump. And, you know, do we alienate him? Do you bring him on board? Do you bring him in? Do you keep him out? What do you do? They're nervous. I'm glad they're nervous.
I say get rid of him. He's a bad trip. He was a bad romance for somebody, not for me. And now, you know, today he's just ordered a recount of the Wisconsin vote, spending $3 million to get a partial recount of that.
$3 million just for a partial?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, what a waste of everything.
I'm surprised he has the credit or the money. But let's try to be, well, we will talk a little bit more about Trump, but let's talk about Biden. Lots of the LGBT groups this week posted their agendas, their white papers for Biden and what he needs to do. And it's all very heavy on protecting our rights, undoing the things that Trump did, taking away rights. Everything is about rights. It's very little about what I would call economic justice. You know, we talk about these trans people who are murdered every week, and it's about the only time we talk about these trans women of color, I'm talking about these particular ones, is when they die. And we don't know anything about them. We just say, oh, it's terrible. And it is terrible. But when you ask them what they want jobs.
Jobs, housing, education.
Exactly.
Actual tangible things that would make their lives different. Yes, we only find out they're dead when we didn't find out anything about how they lived. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest problem, is that we don't have economic justice. We keep looking at a symbolic equality that doesn't really mean anything unless we actually have material well-being. So if we have access to housing, jobs, some kind of financial stability, medical care, that will really help our community more than flag waving, more than a million prides, I would like to say.
Absolutely. So all right, Biden has appointed some of his White House staff this week. His White House counselor is Steve Ricchetti, a longtime aide. He has worked with him as vice president, but he also worked as a big pharma lobbyist and liaison to big donors during the campaign. So, you know, this is not going to be, it's certainly not going to be socialism, that's for sure.
No.
Now, Pete Buttigieg, the gay mayor of, former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is being floated as, now, of course, these are just floats, yeah. You know, UN ambassador. And they're also floating Hillary Clinton as UN ambassador. Mm. Now, of course, some of these people suggest themselves and get themselves mentioned. But, you know, a lot of people say they're going to be very disappointed if we don't get a cabinet member who is LGBTQ.
Mm.
So we will see. They're talking, you know, that woman, Simone Sanders, the African-American black woman who's been a spokesperson for the campaign. They're talking about her as press secretary, and she'd be great. But I also thought Pete Buttigieg would be a great press secretary.
I love him. I think he's great. I think he was one of the best candidates that were running. I'd like to see more of him. I really would.
Well, he knows how to talk to Fox. He's not afraid to go on Fox and spar with them. So, and then he'd be the face of the administration, the gay face of the administration. That'd be nice. But who are some of the others they're talking about? Randy Weingarten, the head of the American Federation of Teachers, possibly for the Secretary of Education. Rafael Bostic. He's the first out gay head of a Fed, a regional Fed, you know, the Fed. And they're talking about him for Treasury. And the transgender doctor, Rachel Levine in Pennsylvania, you know, who's made so much news during the pandemic, talking about her for U.S. Surgeon General. Now, all this is speculation. But part of the way you get these appointments is by talking about them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I was disturbed to read this week, and this is not a particularly gay issue, but, you know, Biden promised during the campaign, they said, are you going to allow Trump to be, and the family, to be prosecuted if, you know, you become the president? And he said, I am not, I promise, I will not interfere with the Department of Justice whatsoever. That is a federal agency that, you know, yes, I appoint the attorney general, but they have to have independent investigations. And now he's like talking to, they're reportedly talking to aides and say, you know, we need to come together and, you know, we need to move on. And it's just, we've got to restore the rule of law. If we've got to clean up the crimes of this family, which are voluminous.
Oh, lock him up. I say lock them all up. Boy, and not even get me started on, we hit 250,000 deaths today from COVID. That is more than needed to happen. And that's when I start to look at Trump and see basically a war criminal, somebody who caused mass deaths that didn't need to occur just because they didn't have a plan.
And is still causing them. And by not cooperating with the incoming Biden administration, it's going to be that much tougher to distribute a vaccine if it works. And if it, you know, I mean, it's hopeful, but it's a massive undertaking.
Right. I think Pfizer applied for emergency, they're going to apply for emergency clearance on Friday. So I think the Pfizer vaccine is looking very good. So is the Moderna. I think we'll probably have three good vaccines by Christmas, but can we get them?
And thank you, Dolly Parton, for your $1 million donation to Moderna. She knew one of the doctors, a doctor encouraged her to do this, and she did it. And people are thrilled about that. Some of the other things about transition, the Biden people are promising to improve data collection about sexual orientation, gender identity, and other groups, including in the census. But of course, now we're talking about the 2030 census. I don't even know.
Right. Did we mention trans woman Sean Skelly is being tapped for the Department of Defense transition team, we think.
That's right. Sean Skelly, a trans veteran. David Noble, who worked as an Obama appointee at NASA, is helping oversee the transition in that agency. Lesbian.
Ty Feldblum.
Yes, she was at the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and she's looking at what's going to happen at the DOJ. And the Human Rights Campaign, there's an out gay Congress member named David Cicilline from Rhode Island, and been there for a long time. They want him to be the assistant speaker of the House to Nancy Pelosi.
He would be good. I think I was on a panel with him in, we're talking about the, he was, yeah, up in Rhode Island. I think I was on a panel with him in Prague many years ago, and he is a very, very good, speaker.
Yeah.
Tough guy, but nice, but nice.
Yeah, he's tough. He was out there during the impeachment hearings as one of the spokespeople and things. Now, the elections, they weren't the blue wave that we needed. We also learned that American voters are not all that progressive. Did you see what happened in California? They went so big for Biden, they defeated a repeal of a ban on affirmative action by 57-43%.
Oh, yeah.
So you see all this? They voted on these issues that they get to vote on out there as a group. And then I read things like Muslims went 35% for Trump in the election, despite his virulent Islamophobia. Somebody I read on Facebook said, well, I got in a cab and it was a Muslim cab driver. And he said, well, Trump's not killing people in the Middle East the way Obama did. And his international kill rate is not as high. Of course, he's just slaughtering us here with COVID.
Yeah, it does come down to when you're a single-issue voter, I think. I think in many ways, I know we talk about cognitive dissonance, but when you are a minority, really, if you're a Muslim or if you're Jewish or if you're
gay,
American or gay, often the just to explain things like log cabin Republicans, often the only power you might have is to refuse your minority status. And it seems counterintuitive and perverse, but I mean, I had this conversation with several black cab drivers who told me they were proudly voting for Trump. And I think I said something like, but why? And the answer was, because I can, and no one is going to keep telling me I'm poor. And that was the message they were getting from the Democrats, was that they were kind of cast in this role as an oppressed minority, and they didn't want to be anymore, you know? So, yeah, with the Muslims, who knows why they're voting for Trump? Because it might be a case that he's withdrawing troops from the Middle East more than any other president in recent history.
Well, you know? God knows what's... Well, of course, it's a disaster over there. You know, a close friend of mine works in Iraq, although he's not allowed to be there now because they all have to work remotely because of COVID. And, you know, they're firing on the American embassy there, where it looks like they're heating up a war with Iran. I mean, it's just a complete mess. And there are so many displaced people over there. But let's get back to the U.S. elections.
Yes.
How about what the House Republicans did this year? They ran a lot of women, people of color.
And it worked
for them.
What do you think is the cause of this? Do you think that they are, it's like, I got my major Phyllis Schlafly vibes from all of this, all of these Republican right-wing women standing up, but for not a cause that we believe in. But what's causing it, do you think?
Well, I think it's a good front that allows people to vote for them without, you know, being so sexist even. And I think that's part of the reason. I think if they're more appealing candidates, and even though they're very, very right wing. So, you know, I think it's something Democrats should do. I mean, Democrats have obviously elected many more women and many more people of color. But I think like in predominantly white districts in this that Democrats have, they might think of putting forward more appealing, balancing candidates, more women, more people of color, et cetera, for the Congress, instead of these white guys clinging to the seats.
Right, right. So we've got 24 Republican women in the House and 8 in the Senate. That sounds like a record, right?
Yes.
Do you think there's any chance that, as suggested by the article in the Christian Science Monitor, that it's actually Democrat women and our attention to minorities that have inspired Republican women to kind of step up?
That's true. They're learning. They learn quick. And look, they're all about power. We have to be much more about that. And you've already raised some of the reasons that some of our messages don't appeal to a lot of people.
Yeah.
On LGBTQ candidates, the Victory Fund now says that there are 224 that have been elected so far in 2020. There were 432 on the general election ballots. If you want to read this list, go to victoryfund.org, and you can see who got elected in your area. And let's talk about some of them. How about what's going to happen in Maine?
Oh, how wonderful.
This
young 28-year-old man, right? And do you know what I loved about reading about his story? He did not grow up
in... his name. His name is Ryan Facto.
And Ryan Facto, does that sound a little bit French, a little bit?
He's French-Canadian, I think.
His grandparents.
Ancestry.
Yeah, his ancestry is... But what I love about him is he grew up disadvantaged, I think, in public housing in Portland, Maine, and he's really made himself this person who wants to count. I think he's been in politics since 21, 22.
Well, he got elected in 22, but the headline that we're burying is he's going to be the state's first out gay Speaker of the House.
Right.
At 28 years old.
That's extraordinary.
And, this is, you know, of course, you know, Maine just reelected Susan Collins. And
oh,
the
yeah.
story in the New York Times today said one of the reasons is because they thought that the voters felt that the Democrat messages against her were too harsh. There's a little bit of politeness up there. Although I read that, I don't know if you know the name Paul LePage. He's the Trumpian. He was the Trumpian governor of Maine. Very anti-gay, very anti-everything, to the right of Trump. And he's looking to run for governor again in 2022, I believe. Anyway. All right.
I'm not a fan of Senator Collins. Not a fan of hers. So I hope. And Maine is a great state. I went to one of my best prides up in Maine, in Portland. It was fantastic. It was right after the Parkland shooting. And Maine is an open carry state, as you know. But they all came out. I know, but they all came out with flags and all the allies, all the
guns blazing.
Guns blazing. Protecting us queers from whoever.
Did you see gun carrying people at the pride?
No, I didn't. How naive am I? When they said Maine was open carry, I thought it meant like drinking in public. You know, I had no clue it was about, you know, bringing.
That's like New Orleans. That's the first time I heard the phrase open carry. You could take the drink
and that's right.
to the street in a go cup, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So.
All right. So some other federal news. Samuel Alito. The Supreme Court Justice. Now, he's already said he's looking at getting rid of the Obergefell decision or fixing it with Clarence Thomas, right? Because it was a bad decision as far as he was concerned. So he gives a speech to the Federalist Society. Yeah. And he claimed that the Obergefell decision relegated freedom of speech to a second-tier constitutional right and said, you can't say that marriage is between a man and a woman anymore. Hmm. People... who are, come on. I mean, he just said it. You can still believe whatever you want to believe. He says you get labeled a bigot if you believe this. And, it is an anti-gay position to oppose our right to marry. But he's kind of a dimwit. And yet he holds this post.
Yeah. I wasn't impressed with him. He looks kind of desperate. And also, as he's gotten older, I don't know what this event was he was doing online, but it felt like very private and club-like, and that many people weren't supposed to see it. So he was very much, to me, speaking as he genuinely feels behind closed doors, you know?
It's the Federalist Society, of which he is a member, and of which all 200 Trump judges that were appointed are members.
Right. But... It's illogical to me to say that somebody's equal rights equal a loss of rights for you. It's kind of like, what is it to him if two men get married? It doesn't make his straight marriage any less of value. But that's the argument. It's for a lawyer, for an attorney, for somebody at that high level of legal argument. It's not logical. And in fact, it's not even what he's saying is not even a point of law. It's just personal opinion.
It is because, yes, I mean, and American people are like 60% in favor of same-sex marriage or more now. But let's look at who's really suffering here. Not people who say, I don't believe in same-sex marriage. It's people. It's trans people who are being murdered. It's kids, LGBTQ kids taking their own lives. You know, it's people losing their jobs. How about some concern over that, Samuel? Anyway, and then there's Trump. He's trying to throw as many disabled people as possible off Social Security in his remaining days by replacing independent administrative law judges with internal hack lawyers, making it harder for the disabled to get and sustain benefits. He hopes to cut Social Security for these people, for the most vulnerable, by $2.6 billion. I didn't go to the MAGA rally in Washington. I heard there were a lot of anti-gay signs, and even some of the gays who showed up, they were like being taunted as homos and things like that by the other MAGA people.
Right.
So hate crimes are up. FBI report came out about that, you know, for many groups. And those crimes based on sexual orientation were...
They're up at 16.8%. They're up, I think. And there's been an uptick against an uptick of about 4.2%. Well, actually, it's much worse now. This last year, there was an uptick of 4.8% of hate crimes against anyone that was gender identifying. And that's up 0.6% on last year. So it is getting worse, yeah.
Well, speaking of gender identity, it is Transgender Awareness.
Transgender Awareness Week.
Yeah. And we mentioned the documentary Transhood that's on HBO.
Yes.
I watched it and I want to recommend it. It's on HBO. You can get it on demand if you have HBO. It's, you remember the movie Boyhood, where they followed this kid through about 10 years. The film was a fiction film. This is following young trans kids. I mean, one of them is like a really little kid, and then some of them are teenagers, and their parents over years, and how they deal with the community, how they deal with themselves, how they deal with their identities. I thought it was just terrific.
Yeah. Well, I really liked Born to Be. I thought that was fantastic. I saw that actually at the New York Film Festival last year. And, you know, you go in cold. I didn't know anything about it. And it's about the transgender surgery unit at Mount Sinai. And it's really under the supervision of a Dr. Jess Ting, who's a former Juilliard-trained bass player. And he is championing the surgeries of his transgender patients. And what I liked also was you see his life, his quality of life's quite poor because he works so hard and, you know, his marriage fell apart and he does nothing but work. And but he believes in these patients, and we follow, I think there's four different patients that we follow, and we get to understand the importance of this surgery on their lives, on their day-to-day lives, on their sense of self. Really, it's about survival. And that's a great film. That is now on, I think it premieres tonight, actually, in the Film Forum Virtual Cinema. So you need to go to filmforum.org if you want to see that. And it's highly recommended. I really love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's actually, you're able to see it in a lot of places. It's going to be on, it can be watched on Roku, Amazon Fire Stick, Apple TV. And for more information on how to see it, go to born to be film.com, and you can see that. A non-trans film that's out, and you watch it, so I want to hear all about it from you, is Ghosts of the Republic. What is that about?
What is it about? What does it mean? The title refers to the fact that because surrogacy and surrogate children are illegal in France, if you are a gay couple who go overseas to a country such as the United States that permits surrogate programs, and you have the baby's born, you take it back to France, that child is a persona non grata, really. They have no legal citizenship in France. And this story in particular follows two gay men, two very good looking, they appear to be quite well set up, wealthy gay men, who get an egg donor, a young female egg donor in Las Vegas, and a female surrogate in Las Vegas. And the film shows how they build that family and how they navigate the medical system. And then once they get the little person, I don't want to say too much and spoil it for you, what happens when they try to go back to France with the baby. It's really moving. And I like both of these films that I mentioned today, because when we look at these issues in our community, we often just look at the numbers and the statistics and the opposing forces. We don't often see the people behind these stories and the way that it can either shatter their lives or build them. And both of these films really do give us complex and nuanced views of these subjects.
Well, you don't want to give too much away, because I, when I heard this business of you bring the child back and the child does not have a legal status, what do you do? So I'll have to watch the film to find out, huh?
Oh, yeah. And really, in our community, the last bastion of our rights is to do with parenting, I think. And these young men, you see, they keep saying over and over again, we're doing something illegal. We're breaking the law to do this. And they are. So, you know, in rights, the French government can take that little child away from them and put them in the foster care system if it wanted to. It could.
And this movie, even though it's French guys, It is produced and narrated by Dan Savage. And the guys speak English during the film, or both?
They do both. They do. When they're with their own families in France, they do speak French, and it is has English subtitles. So don't let that be a barrier to you. It's a really accessible film, really easy to watch.
So that is available on Amazon Prime, iTunes, and other platforms. And if you want to know more about that, go to ghostsoftherepublique.com. I hope our director, Rich, will put that up on the screen.
Yep, and that premiered last night, so it's up there right now.
Okay. Some sadness here. The noted biologist, Rob Lue, L-U-E, we have a picture of him. He was the director of life sciences education at Harvard. He's died of cancer at the age of 56. He was a beloved teacher and a visionary in science. With his husband, Alan Veiel, V-I-E-L, they wrote The Inner Life of the Cell, an animation that is one of the most widely used in the field. They were together for 30 years, and he was Mr. Lue was a native of Jamaica. Okay. All right. In New York, hey, did you know that Ann and I worked at the Hetrick Martin Institute for LGBTQ youth back in the 20th century? we were in the education department. We left in the mid-90s for other pursuits. Although I was doing the show at the time. They have a new executive director.
Well, CEO.
Yeah, Joe Presley, and anybody in New York who's been in the community knows Joe Presley. Now, HMI, of course, is for LGBTQ youth. They say LGBTQ youth of color primarily, and he has a long record of service in government, nonprofits. He used to be one of the leaders of the New York AIDS Coalition, Harlem United Community AIDS Center, and deputy commissioner for the New York City Department of Homelessness. So he's really the perfect guy for the job. Yeah, succeeding Thomas Crever, who we also loved very much. In California, we told you about out-gay Martin Jenkins, who was nominated to be a justice of the state Supreme Court, the first out-gay justice. Well, they confirmed him. He's a black guy, but he said his identity as a gay man has been perhaps the greatest challenge of his life. So, welcome to the high court. Shall we go to some international news?
Oh, why not?
All right. Let's see. Where do we start? How about Hungary?
Oh, Hungary. Boy, oh, boy. They're really dragging the chain in the union, aren't they? Right. I mean, what are they going backwards for? It's that PM, the Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, I think is his name.
Orban,
he's
completely
right wing, isn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the people who called Biden to congratulate
him. That's so interesting. Well, so this is what I understand. Tell me if I'm wrong. Hungary is proposing a bill to ban basically same-sex adoption. So if you are a same-sex couple, you cannot adopt a child. The only way around it is to adopt a child as a single gay person.
But if they find out about you, they're going to stop you.
So this legislation is being drafted and submitted by the right-wing Fidesz party, which is the party behind Orban.
Well, single people can only adopt if they have a single, it doesn't matter what their sexual orientation is, if they have the special permission from the Minister of Family Affairs.
Right.
It's a family affair. They're also proposing a constitutional amendment requiring children to be raised with a, get this, Christian interpretation of gender roles. Now, this is, of course, a country that happily purged its Jews during World War II and handed them over to the Nazis for extermination. It's all seen as a distraction from the government's handling of the pandemic. All this kind of stuff. Whenever you see them, this kind of bigotry rear its head, it's all about we're not doing a good job in the basic things, so we'll do this. And they also moved in Hungary to abolish the Equal Treatment Authority so that there'll be no enforcement of equal rights. Hungary, you know, when I was growing up, we were told we were Hungarian. My grandfather was from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Wow. The place he's from is now in Romania. And basically, the Huns were German, and they lived in a German town in what's now Romania. But we used to say we were Hungarian, but it's not a very proud identity these days.
Well, it's so interesting. And because of where it is landlocked in Europe like that, and they have their own really complex issues, not to really forgive them about it, because they are part of the European Union, right? So they need to observe the rule of law of the bloc. But there is a history in Hungary that goes back to the Magyars, which is very warlike and proud and strange. Basically, we are talking about people who could ride on the back of the horse with the cutlass and basically just attack their enemies. I mean, this is their history. So, and then on the other hand, they've got, you know, balancing the Roma population right now, which is suffering a lot of homelessness and poverty and mental illness, and it's complicated.
It is, and they have that damn language, which is unique. I mean, it's like, what is it? I mean, is it some, nobody speaks it. I mean, my grandparents actually, although they mostly spoke German at home, they knew Hungarian. And they switched to it during World War I because the Germans were so persecuted here. But you mentioned the European Union.
Yeah.
And their commissioner for equality wants financial penalties for EU countries that do not respect LGBT rights. This is Helena Dalli.
I like her. I like her a great deal. She's basically saying we need to put our money where our mouth is, and if you don't observe the rule of law on the continent, you're going to get, you should face these financial penalties. I agree with her.
And, you know, she says she's introducing a commission strategy to protect LGBTQ rights across the entire bloc. Upholding the rule of law is what it's about. And, you know, this is true in Poland and in Hungary and other places. Now, Poland, you know, we've been talking for weeks about how the government there got reelected on an anti-gay platform, although narrowly. I like to think it hurt them a bit to be so anti-LGBTQ. But so some cities have lit up their buildings in rainbow colors as a protest, including Warsaw and Gdańsk and others. But the gay LGBT activists are saying, okay, mayor of Warsaw, you promised a shelter for LGBTQ youth. How about delivering on that? You know, let's not just light up buildings. Let's actually do something.
The report they released the commission did some research. They said that 43% of LGBTQ people in the EU basically have been discriminated against or feel they've been discriminated against this past year. So that's going up. Again, these incidents are rising. Yeah, I hope they sort it out, because it's we wouldn't want it to sort of devolve after Brexit, would we? And go back to that kind of patchwork of nations with their own.
I hope we don't go back to a patchwork of states that support same-sex marriage if the Supreme Court has its way under Alito and Thomas. Now, speaking of discrimination, now the United Kingdom had Remembrance Sunday about a week and a half ago. I mean, it's sort of equivalent to our Veterans Day.
Yes. You know,
wreaths of poppies are laid at the cenotaph, which is just this column in the middle of a street in London, but that's where they have all the ceremonies, and the royals show up, and really the Queen was there, and the government ministers, they're all parties. Everybody gets together, nobody fights, everybody honors the war dead. They call them the glorious dead there. That's what's on the cenotaph. But human rights campaigner, and we have a picture of him, Peter Tatchell there on the left, and RAF, Royal Air Force veteran, David Bonney laid a rainbow and poppy wreath in honor of LGBTQ veterans. The story about Bonney is incredible. You want to talk about that a little bit? All right. He was the last service member to be jailed for being gay for 6 months, dishonorable discharge. 1993, this was. He lost some of his pension entitlement that has still not been restored, but he did finally get an honorable discharge.
He also said that, and when I found out this happened in the 90s, I was actually shocked, because I was coming out in 1992, you know. But he basically said that they also used entrapment, that the military followed him around. They tried to bait him to come out so that they could then prosecute him, which was awful, because he was trying his hardest to do what we would call don't ask, don't tell, just leave me alone and let me serve. But they actually were trying to provoke him to come out. out so that
we didn't lift the ban on gays in the military until the Obama administration, late in the Obama administration, I believe. I'm forgetting the year, but it was late. It took a long time. By the way, I'm going to take you back to New York State for a minute. Brad Hoylman, our state senator here, the Restoration of Honor Act has been enacted, providing a pathway to eligibility for state veterans benefits to New Yorkers discharged less than honorably from the U.S. military due to sexual orientation and gender identity, but also due to military sexual trauma, brain injury, or PTSD. So he's opened up some benefits, and there are a lot of state benefits there. Okay. We've really buried the headline. Angola. Angola is adding protections for sexual orientation to the country's laws. It goes into effect in February. It's part of a revision that removes vices against nature that was used to criminalize gay sex, and it adds anti-discrimination protections. And the justice minister, I love this, called it an act of sovereignty after 134 years of being governed by the colonial code under Portugal, which they were a colony. The vote took place in 2019. The vote for this was 155 for, 1 against, and 7 abstentions. Angola. It's wonderful. I hope that it spreads throughout Africa.
Absolutely.
I mean, South Africa, of course, has protections for us in the Constitution. That doesn't mean that it's a bed of roses for LGBTQ people, but it's in the law.
So fascinating. What about Latvia, when we're speaking of other little tiny places?
Well, the Constitutional Court there recognized the right of same-sex couples to parental leave. So
pretty good.
That's progress.
Better than a kick in the pants. And what about Brussels? Brussels is doing something. They're trying to do something that's along the line of the Equality Act. They unveiled their first ever LGBTQ strategy for equality, comprehensive equality. That's what I read here as part of this.
Belgium have one of the places that had a gay prime minister? I think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these very small nations, but often
one of the Benelux countries.
Yes. So, this has all come out of what Helena Dalli was saying in her conference there, which was, I love what she said here, the way we are born is not ideology, it's nature, biology, science.
Wonderful. Not so wonderful. Back in the United Kingdom, sorry to keep bringing this up, but the High Court rejected a trans man's bid to be his child's father, Freddie McConnell. It's a famous case. They made a documentary about him called Seahorse. He's listed as the mother on the child's birth certificate, even though his other official documents show him as male. He stopped taking testosterone in 2016 and became pregnant through a donated sperm. He may appeal this to the European Court of Human Rights, although I'm not completely clear with Brexit what happens to that in Britain. And there's a case back in Australia where celebrities are rallying around an asylum seeker named Ali, a gay refugee who's been in prison for 8 years. So there's a video campaign featuring Anthony Brandon Wong of the Matrix sequels, who's out gay, Remy Hai of Crazy Rich Asians, and others. Ali was stabbed by his male partner's male relatives in the Middle East, and the government will not hear his asylum plea.
I don't know what to say. As you know, I'm very, very upset by Australia's current administration's policies on asylum seekers and refugees, and
is it worse than Trump's?
Well, I don't know if I can quantifiably measure it in terms of statistics, but I just feel that when Australia is in such a luxurious position, it can afford to be a little kinder to people who are seeking asylum. And we have these two horrible islands off the coast of the continent. One is called Manus, which is where Ali is, and the other one is called Nauru. And they're kind of in a very weird territory zone for us. But we have all these refugees just sitting there for years. dying, getting sick, giving birth, and no one seems to be able to solve this problem. So it's not going to be addressed under the current administration because we have a conservative government right now. But yeah, it's very upsetting to me.
Okay. All right. Some AIDS news?
Yes, you have that.
Well, on Showtime, they're running a four-part documentary called The Reagans about President Reagan and his times. And much of it is about what a racist precursor he was to Trump, but it will go into his abject criminal neglect of the AIDS crisis, which is how that spread around the world. I mean, you're talking about a pandemic. Now, we complain about Trump, and he's awful. Reagan didn't speak about AIDS for 6 years into the pandemic. 6 years, allowing this virus to spread here, spread all over the world, did not take it. I'm not saying that the government did absolutely nothing. I mean, we had the Surgeon General, Everett Koop, and some halfway decent people, but no leadership from the president whatsoever. And Fauci, in this documentary, Dr. Fauci, who was there at the time, says, I was very frustrated with seeing an emerging catastrophe, and he wanted Reagan nothing to do with it. I wish I expressed that at the time.
Isn't it interesting, the parallels? There was a lot of anger in our community when some of us started talking about the parallels between the AIDS pandemic and this, but I really do think there are parallels. And I think that if there's one thing we can learn over time, the right wing does not deal well with this situation. They would rather bury their head in the sand, and it means they have to enlist science. It means they have to spend money. They don't want to do any of that.
But think of the way they spoke to us in those days. Oh, if you people would just modify your behavior and stop screwing, you know, that they blamed us, you know, and now when we say to them, wear a goddamn mask, you know, I mean, you know, they go, oh, no, it's my freedom. I mean, come on. It's all who's ox is.
Isn't it incredible? Because really, the judgment attached to it is really extraordinary, but it is, these are viruses are spread through intimacy, whatever the varying degree of intimacy it is. It is how a virus is spread.
And they wanted us all locked up for having sex, or, you know, they wanted us locked up. They wanted us put on an island. And when all we suggest is they call it coercive measures, when we just say take basic precautions. So it's insane.
Well, you've reminded me now about Grey's Anatomy and the first pandemic sex on the new season. Did you hear about that? The Grey's Anatomy series on, I think it's on ABC. We have the first pandemic gay sex scene in which two men drag each other into the utility closet, and one of them says, "Do you mind? Can I leave my mask on?" Which is the right thing to do.
Right. I haven't attempted this, but yes, that sounds right. And we're talking about Nico Kim is the character played by Alex Landy. And
that's right.
His ex-boyfriend, Dr. Levy Schmidt, played by Jake Borelli, attractive couple. And they say they have the sex for stress relief, and they keep it safe. Back in the real world, and I do hope people are having safe sex in the real world, but this guy is very sex positive, Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis. We've had him on the show a number of times as our guest. He is someone who did HIV testing and outreach in bathhouses in his New York jobs, and advertising, you know, stories were written about him in the Times. He's a, you know, very sex positive guy. Well, I have to say, I was shocked to read at this late stage of the Trump administration, he is the new director of the CDC's Division of HIV and AIDS Prevention. The National Minority AIDS Coalition praised him for his history of being culturally responsive and culturally humble in his community engagement. So, well done. And he's somebody I hope that Biden keeps on.
I hope so. I don't understand this administration. The other day on Twitter, Donald Trump wished everybody a happy Diwali. I can't keep up with it.
In New Zealand, they've launched free HIV self-test kits from vending machines. I hope we start getting COVID tests, you know, in vending machines or in the mail free, because I'm seeing all these people lined up for hours and hours and hours outside agencies. All right, let's get some entertainment news done here.
Yes.
I watched season 4 of The Crown.
Right.
This is the age of Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher is the prime minister, played by Gillian Anderson.
Oh, I love her. We love
and
her.
Diana, played by Emma Corrin. This is sort of 1979 to 90. I have a friend in London, an older guy, you know, not that much older than me, but older. He said, I've been a staunch monarchist my whole life. After I watched the first two episodes of this season, I am reconsidering.
Really?
Because it's such an awful family. And that's what you see. We also see how Australia, under Labor Prime Minister Bob Hawke, was moving towards being a republic back in those days. And what I'm not going to give it away, but what happens when Charles visits Australia with Diana? Do you remember that visit?
It was such a big deal. I'm showing my age now, but we've always, as you know, we're a British colony.
And you're the editor-in-chief of queer40.com.
I had a great 40th birthday in October. It was lovely. So basically, we've always had this movement in Australia to try and get away from the monarchy and establish our independence, and it's called our Republican movement. But many of us who grew up with the royal family, like I watched with my mother the Queen's Christmas message every year. We just did, you know, it's kind of like home. So we're ambivalent about it for sure, but there's been different politicians that have come up and wanted to just make a clean break and get away from the royal family. And then they're the best-selling thing. When we're doing news in Australia, a story on the royal family will get the most clicks. Always does.
Well, and she's on your money, isn't she?
You know, it's been a long time since I looked at Australian money, but I think she still is, yeah.
She still is. Now, in terms of The Crown Season 4, what about the gay stuff? Mm. You know, there's some homophobic jokes told in the royal family during this thing, including by Charles. But it also features, we have a picture of this, Princess Margaret's friend slash paramour, a guy, this is a true story, a guy named Dazzle Jennings. And then the Queen comes on and says, oh, doesn't everybody know he's a friend of Dorothy? I mean, I don't know if the Queen would use that phrase. She never says gay. But this guy becomes a Roman Catholic priest, very common for gay men, and tries to convert the lost soul Margaret, Helena Bonham Carter. Well, I won't tell you how that scene goes, but it's a good one in the show. Okay.
Interesting.
All right. Take us to the cover of Vogue magazine.
Oh, it's a lovely, lovely Harry Styles with his...
First man on the cover of Vogue.
Isn't it the first solo man? So normally men are photographed on the cover of Vogue as couples with a woman, for example, but he's the first man to appear as the solo subject.
Thank you.
And the cover story is by the always excellent Hamish Bowles, who goes into a lot of lovely detail about hanging out with Harry over a number of days in England. But I don't remember, as I read this 3,000-word cover story, anything coming up about his sexuality. So it's more about his gender presentation and that he's always loved, as they do in England, because the weather's so shite, dress-ups and playing dress-ups and getting gowns and negligees out of boxes and wearing them since they've been little. It's actually a very British thing to do. And I think here in America, we're all shocked by this, that he likes putting a frock on, but it's quite normal in England.
He doesn't, well, of course, you've got kilts and everything, but he doesn't declare his sexuality.
No.
But he said, I did this because I just want to look cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and he loves play acting. He's turning into a really good actor, and that's really what Hamish's story talks about mostly, is there's really more to Harry Styles than just this kid that they got in One Direction and became a pop star.
Dunkirk.
Yep, Dunkirk. And Olivia Wilde saw him in that, and she snapped him up for her next film, which is apparently got very good buzz around it. And she described Harry as being, and I'm quoting here, truly devoid of any traits of toxic masculinity. He's redefining what it can mean to be a man with confidence, you know, and a different kind of man, which is very different to what Candace Owens then shamed Harry for being effeminate.
Well, naturally, the conservative commentators went nuts over this. Yeah. And someone named Candace Owens said, the steady feminization of our men is an outright attack on society. She called it inexplicably, Marxist. So, I mean, it's just they just lose it. And of course, these are the very conservative, generally Christian types who never. Put up that picture of Jesus with the kids that I sent over. I mean, Jesus wore a dress all the time. Jesus was soft masculine, very famous for his gowns. That's at least the way he is depicted.
No, she's a, we can have another show about Candace Owens. She's a real case. So she married this blonde British guy, which he's not exactly the poster boy for masculinity. So I don't understand where she's
coming. Oh, okay. All right. We're down to our last 3 minutes. We want to note a piece of history.
Yes.
Jesse James Keitel.
Yes. The first non-binary series regular in a lead role on primetime TV ever.
As a character named Jerry on ABC's Big Sky. I only watched the trailer. It centers on a hunt for the abductor of women in Montana. Jerry, a trans feminine non-binary artist and sex worker, is one of the targets of this killer. Big Sky is ABC's only new fall drama. Ryan Philippe also stars. It's on Tuesdays at 10. But of course, Showtime on cable featured non-binary Asia Kate Dillon on Billions.
That's right.
Now we are down to 2 minutes. Do you want to, which trailer should we show go out with? Born to Be or Ghosts of the Republic? Maybe Born to Be.
Yeah, it's Transgender Awareness Week.
Let's go out with that and come back to us and say goodbye, Rich, if you don't mind, if you can bring that up. Can you? Rich?
Hello.
Even the first day we just know each other, I know that he is the one.
He had this power on me. He has every quality that I wanted to find. Like everybody, we want to have a baby in our family.
We heard about the possibility to have a baby with a surrogate, but surrogacy is forbidden in France.
If you go in another country and you come back with the child, the French law will not acknowledge any relationship between you and your child.
L'enfant devient un objet qui s'achète, privé du droit de connaître sa mère.
The campaigners that are out on the streets marching through central Paris in defense of traditional family values.
International surrogacy is becoming a booming business. Couples from around the world paying American women give birth to their children.
No passport, no paper. These children don't exist.
It was the first time of my life that I was going to do something illegal in my country. Everything has to be secret. They will take the baby from us.
All right, Rich, come back to us.
I take that risk.
Rich? Okay, that was Ghost of the Republic, not Born to Be. We will include both trailers in our email. If you go to gayusatv.org and sign up for our email, we will send you the links to those both of those trailers. And it's great to have been with you, Maren.
It's lovely to be back, and I wish you and Anne many more wonderful shows, and I hope to pop in another time.
Oh, I really hope so, too. Thanks for everybody being with us, and we'll see you next week.